You are listening to On The Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Saturday, October 14th, 2017 NBA edition of On The Daily, brought to you by RotoViz Radio. I'm Matt LaMarca, on Twitter at Matt LaMarca, and I'm joined tonight by Vince Long, who you can find on Twitter at WakeWorkWake. Vince, how we doing today?
Doing good, man. Just ready to do a podcast with ending on the best team in the National Basketball Association, so everybody should be excited.
Yeah, you'll have to wait, I guess, to find out what that team is. Super excited. Basketball is right around the corner. First games are starting up on Tuesday. The RotoViz NBA Pass is officially active now, and we are offering early bird pricing through midnight on Sunday. So I recommend checking that out. You get $10 off, and then you can also get a 30% discount if you subscribe through the podcast homepage. That is rotoviz.com/NBA podcast. We're going to have tons of content this year, so I really recommend taking advantage of the early bird pricing while you can. And I also ask, as always, that you just guys please rate and review us on iTunes. Let's start with the New Orleans Pelicans. They are coached by Alvin Gentry. It is his third year with the team. They were 34-48 last season, tied for 25th in offensive efficiency, tied for 8th in defensive efficiency, and they were 9th in pace. This year, their Vegas over-under is at 39.5, and they are plus 2,000 to win the division, plus 6,600 to win the conference, and plus 15,000 to win the title. As far as additions go, they added Rajon Rondo, Darius Miller, Ian Clark, and Tony Allen. They lost Tim Frazier, Donatas Montiunas, and Dante Cunningham, and that obviously goes with the big DeMarcus Cousins trade that they made at the All-Star break last year. So let's start with that. How successful do you see this Anthony Davis-DeMarcus Cousins pairing being this season? Because it is kind of a weird fit to think about.
Oh, it truly is. I mean, these guys, you're never, before this actually happened, nobody had ever really considered this because, I mean, that's, they're almost the same human. Like, it's almost the same game in a way, but they're going to feed these guys. I think for fantasy-wise, they're both going to be great. It might be tough to, if you're just going to play one, but like, throughout this preseason, I don't know if anybody's been playing preseason DFS, but you can pair them both up together and get a, you know, a nice 90 to 100 points between the two of them, and it's not a bad way to build your lineup. But I think they're going to work well together, man. I mean, DeMarcus is a great passer. They're both incredible rebounders. The team's not afraid to just feed them. I mean, you heard Tony Allen in the offseason. He says, we have two giants. We're going to feed them. I mean, it's not a bad way to play basketball is having, you know, twin towers down low that can score from anywhere on the court.
Definitely. And I mean, at least Anthony Davis is a little bit more perimeter orientated, so he can sort of, you know, hang out a little bit more on the perimeter and let DeMarcus work the inside. I'm a little bit more concerned about Davis, I guess, more than anybody. Last season when they shared the court together, Davis's usage dropped pretty dramatically. It went from 33.7 all the way down to 27.6. His rebounding rate fell by about 3.5%. And he went from averaging 1.5 DK points per minute to 1.15. So a big drop in fantasy value when those two guys were on the court together. Now, granted, he's going to get plenty of minutes without Davis on the floor. I mean, if I was setting up the team, I would certainly be looking to do sort of what Houston's thinking about doing with James Harden and Chris Paul, which is making sure that one of the two was on the court at all times. But I still think that it definitely limits Davis's upside, at least slightly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously these guys are going to eat into each other. I mean, that's clear. But I feel like if they're both, like, just taking DraftKings, for instance, like, I mean, both these guys could see 11, 12K if they were on, you know, teams by themselves. But I think we're going to see them right there in, like, the low, like, 10.2, 10.3 area for the majority of the season. And just because they're going to eat into each other. And yes, like they obviously don't have the upside that they once brought on a night-to-night basis. But I feel like both of them are still going to be monsters. And I mean, just it's all about price, obviously. I mean, that's what the world we live in. But I just don't see their prices getting to the point where it's outrageous, you know?
For sure. And I'm much less concerned about Boogie. I think that he's going to be the safer every night play of the two.
Because I agree with that.
He's gotten his regardless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was averaging 1.5 in Sacramento DK points, and he was at 1.47 in New Orleans, even when Davis was on the court. So he's going to get his regardless.
Yeah, and I'm obviously we can look at the end of the season last year for numbers, but like that's a middle of the season trade, you know, like spur of the moment. Like they can't just work them into the offense that quick. I feel like it's going to be a much better system this year. Now they've got some time. They've had the offseason. They've got, you know, camp and preseason. They've had time to work this out and work together. So I feel like this is going to be a better version than what we saw at the end last year.
Yes, I do agree with that. All right, so with those two guys likely commanding, I don't know, roughly 60% of the possessions combined, is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that.
What does that leave for a guy like Drew Holiday?
Oh, GPP consideration? I mean, I don't think you're going to be playing Drew that often in cash because I don't think the shot volume is going to be there. Now, obviously, injuries are going to take a part, and the fact that Rondo is not going to be, you know, on the court to start the season is big for him too. But obviously, three guys can put up numbers because the rest of the roster is atrocious. I know that Dante Cunningham was supposed to sign with a new team, but he actually is back with the Pelicans.
Oh, okay.
And then, I mean, if you look at the rest of the roster, who the hell is going to score points? You know, I mean, Ian Clark is probably the next best scorer on that bench that I'm looking at. Obviously, Etuan Moore, we know what he is. But, I mean, Tony Allen's not scoring. I mean, that's just – so I think Drew's going to be able to get his in specific matchups. But, man, it's going to be hard to go back to that well regularly.
Yeah, I mean, even if he carves out a usage rate of like 20%, that still only leaves 20% for the rest of the team.
Which I think is probably about right.
Yeah, no, I agree too. I think it's going to be a really two-headed attack with a third, you know, I don't know, mini head, I guess. but I'm with you. I don't think that there's enough there consistently for Holiday to be somebody that I'm really going to be looking at very often.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
What do you think we can expect from Rondo when he does return from his injury? I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but I kind of am buying Rondo a little bit here.
I mean, I think he's going to rack up assists because my God, he's going to have options to throw the ball to. I don't know how it's going to work because I am envisioning him and Drew playing together and with, you know, Drew off the ball. And I just think it's going to be for fantasy purposes. I think it's going to be really, really tough to peg the backcourt down on a night to night basis. But, for real basketball, I actually think that that's a very fun lineup because basically you have four guys that can handle the ball because I trust Boogie with the ball. Maybe not as much with Anthony Davis, but I mean, he's pretty good at taking it up the court for a 7-footer. So, I mean, having that flexibility on an offense from a real basketball perspective is incredible. But for DFS, I'm saying I'm not buying Rondo. I mean, it's going to be tough to pay up for Rondo with the way that this roster is built, I think.
Yeah, so it's going to depend on his pricing. I don't think he's going to be a very expensive
option. Where do you see him landing, like, average? Like, if you had to give an average salary for him, where do you think he'd land?
I think he opens up at 5K, and his ceiling would be, like, 6.5, 7.
Yeah, see, in my head, I had, like, 5.8, 5.9 as, like, his normal price, which I feel like from here and there, he's going to be playable.
Yeah, so I'm looking at his numbers in Sacramento, and now granted he played a crazy amount of minutes that season.
Yeah.
But he had an assist rate of 48%. He averaged almost 12 assists a game playing with DeMarcus. I think that pairing works because you know DeMarcus wants the ball and you know Rondo does not want the ball. So
yeah, he did play like 48 minutes a game there for like an extended period of time though. So
yeah, he finished with like 36 minutes a night.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen again.
For sure, I'm not banking on him getting 11.5 assists tonight, but I think that he has, you know, 8 assist upside. And the real reason I'm buying him is his 3-point shooting at the end of last season. Now, I don't know if that's real. It could be a short, you know, fluky situation, but post All-Star break on roughly 2.6 attempts per game, he shot over 46% from 3.
We've seen enough Rondo. There's no way that I'm buying into him having a shot, let alone an outside game. Like, I just can't.
I mean,
can't see that staying there.
Guys develop jump shots. You know, Jason Kidd morphed into a good 3-point shooter at the end of his career. I think it's possible. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be 46%. That's ridiculous. But if he can shoot, you know, 38, 39% from 3 and space the floor a little bit with what we know he can do with the assist numbers, I think it'll be hard to take him off the court, and then that definitely can lead to a bigger fantasy role. So I'm buying him. I don't mind taking him in season-long drafts as a flyer at the end of your draft, and I'm probably going to be paying for him at the beginning of the season when he comes back from injury, depending on what his price is.
How long is he out for? It's a couple weeks, right?
I saw 4 to 6 weeks. The most optimistic expectation puts him missing about 11 games or so.
Okay, which isn't too bad.
Right. All right, let's talk about an X factor here.
You want my my big shocking reveal here?
All right, I'm ready.
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
I think it's the bigs. It took me a long time to figure that one out, but I mean, whether this team wins games or not is dependent on how those two play together, period. Like, that's it. Like, that's the whole roster. Like, who's your X factor? Tell me.
Ian Clark.
Yeah, I thought about him. I really, really did. And I just went the more obvious approach, but I mean, yeah, Ian Clark is actually a really good one. I got to give that to you.
I just think that they're going to need to play these two big guys together successfully, right? You're going to need to really space the floor with the rest of your team, I think.
Yeah.
So I think Clark brings that certainly more than, you know, a guy like Tony Allen does, who is another guy that I like. And, you know, we'll see what kind of role he can carve out. But that's why I think the real answer for me is Rondo's 3-point shooting as an X factor. But since I already talked about that, I'll say Ian Clark as well.
I have no issues. I'm not going to argue with you on Ian Clark. I think that was a great signing for them for exactly what you just said. It's going to be floor spacing, which is going to be really, really good for the system they want to run with these two bigs. So, but yeah, I mean, this roster is a hot dumpster fire.
Yeah, outside of the obvious, not great. It's not great.
But we're about to talk about just another terrible roster, so we'll get there in a second.
Well, first, I want a bold prediction for this team.
Bold prediction is that the Pelicans, along with, who was my other one? LA.
The Lakers.
The Lakers and the Pelicans both make the playoffs.
All right, well, you've got a lot of stake riding in the Pelicans and DeMarcus Cousins in particular after our last podcast.
So. My boy.
I'm going in the other direction. I say that for the second year in a row, DeMarcus Cousins is traded at the All-Star break.
Wow. Hey, man, I'm not going to argue with you, but
it's either going to go one of two ways.
Why would
they
do that, though? Why would they have made that move just to trade him 365 days later?
He's a free agent in the offseason, and if things don't look like they're working, the piece that you have to protect here is Anthony Davis. He's the one that you're building around in the long term. And if you don't think that it's going to work with Cousins and Davis, you got to get what you can get for him and flip him. So we'll see. I mean, that's a sort of a worst case scenario if things don't go well. I could totally see them making the playoffs if things do go well. But I'm kind of leaning more towards them not being a playoff team this year.
You're trying to get everybody traded, man.
I like trades, man. I mean, that's
well, you follow the right sport then, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's the NBA with the new salary stuff is great for that. I really think the NBA is flourishing right now.
This offseason was outrageous.
Absolutely.
This whole offseason was drunk. So,
all right, let's move on to the Dallas Mavericks. They are coached by Rick Carlisle. This is his 10th year with the team. Last year, they were 33-49. They were 23rd in offensive efficiency, tied for 15th in defensive efficiency, and 29th in pace. The defensive efficiency there undersells them a bit defensively. They were basically across the board last year a team that you did not want to target in terms of fantasy. They were by far and away the best team against point guards. So even though that they're sort of middle of the pack in terms of defense, the fact that they play so slow kind of undersells how stingy they are from a fantasy perspective. Over-under-wise, they are at 35.5 right now. And they are plus 5,000 to win the division, plus 20,000 to win the West, and plus 50,000 to win the title. Really not a lot of activity in the offseason. They just drafted Dennis Smith Jr., and that's about it. No other real additions or departures. I think they also might have gotten Josh McRoberts, but that's really it. So at this point, we'll start with Dirk Nowitzki, obviously coming to the end of his career here. But what realistically do you expect of him this season?
Well, to start off, what did he play? 53 games last season. I think that's definitely a lock. They're not going to play him on back-to-backs. They're not going to play him heavy minutes. I all but ignored Dirk for the majority of the season last year. Now, he obviously had his games. They're playing him at the 5, which is actually good for DFS value, but I don't know. I just don't understand why they don't move him to the four, back to the four, play Nerlens, and then just let him play 24 minutes a game. I think they're just going to roll him out there to sell tickets is really my answer for what does Dirk have left in the tank, is I think that they're just going to let him go out there on home games and not back-to-backs, and that's about it, man. I think it's done. This has got to be his last year, right?
I mean, he signed a two-year deal, I think, but honestly, I don't know why he's still playing.
Yeah.
I'll be honest here, full disclosure, Dirk Nowitzki is my all-time favorite NBA player. I'm a huge Dirk fan.
I have no problem with that, actually, because, I mean, he's been awesome his entire career. So
yeah, I mean, he's like sixth all-time in points now, which I don't think many people would know. He's just had a tremendous career, and them beating the Heat the first year of LeBron in Miami was like one of my all-time top basketball moments.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
That being
said,
he's done. He's still an effective player, but he can't play very many minutes. And the fact that they're going to try and play him at center means that we should be targeting this team with opposing centers basically every single night. I mean, asking Dirk to box out some of these centers in this league is going to be a nightmare. I mean, anytime the Jazz play Dallas, Gobert is going to be a lock for a 20-plus rebound game.
Yeah. Guys like Drummond? Oh, my God.
Right. So I'm with you on that. I don't really see him as a center, but they want to get all their guys on the floor, and that's the way that they play, you know, Harrison Barnes, Wesley Matthews, Seth Curry, and Dennis Smith Jr. all together is by playing Dirk at center. So I'm with you. I think it'll be like a token start, but he averaged about 26 minutes a game last year. I think that would be the most of what you could expect from him this year.
Absolutely. That's got to be the ceiling.
So let's talk Dennis Smith Jr. He opened up the year as sort of like a sneaky rookie of the year pick. I want to say he was plus 900 or so. His odds now are all the way up to the third best, right behind Lonzo and Ben Simmons. He's at plus 350. So Dennis Smith Jr. is not sneaking up on anybody this year. Just how high are your expectations for him?
I mean, I think he's good. I think he's going to be the best player on this team in the very near future. I think they're pretty high for him heading into this, but I think he's had a pretty good offseason for, you know, not playing an actual NBA game yet. I think he's showing that, hey, I'm as good as they're talking about, but I think it's going to be really fun to see because he's on a team that will let him develop. I mean, Carlisle, he's a good coach. Not that he's had a roster to coach recently, but I think it's a good landing spot for him. I think he's going to be a DFS play for the entire season. You know, I mean, I think he's going to be one of those guys that we kind of go with, but Seth Curry's going to play well next to him too. So it's going to be a really interesting backcourt.
Yeah. I think he's the best player on the team already. So,
okay.
I'm a big fan. Barea led the team last year with usage at 26.2%. I think that that's basically like the floor for what Smith will have this year. I just see him being a huge part of this offense. So
yeah, I could see that. I could see it being drastically higher than that, actually. I could see him being up 27, 28 without even really blinking an eye.
Right. So I really like the plus 350 rookie of the year odds for him. I liked it a whole lot more at plus 900, but I think that he's my pick. He's my pick to win rookie of the year. I don't know if that's a hot take. We said we struggled with hot takes for this team, but
you probably could have used that one. Cause I think Lonzo's already won it as long as he, you know, has a pulse, but you know,
let's talk a little bit about Harrison Barnes. He's extremely boring. Can I say that? Am I allowed to say that about Harrison Barnes?
I mean, but you're allowed to tell the truth. Yes.
But he was actually a pretty viable option last year on the nights that Dirk didn't play. What are your expectations for him this year?
If he's going to keep getting that volume, yeah, he's a safe cash game option. I mean, that's what he was all last season because he was getting, I don't know what he ended up averaging, but I mean, we're seeing like 15 shots a game from him. And he doesn't do much else. He's not the best rebounder. He's definitely not going to pass the ball with that kind of volume. But I think that because they never changed his price. He was like 6.2 on DraftKings for like 3 months.
Yep.
And I mean, it's like, why not play him if he's getting that many shots? Yeah, I think he's going to be exactly what he was last year.
Yeah, I'm with you. If Dirk's out, I'll play him. Otherwise, I'm not touching him. Last year, without Dirk, he had a usage rate of about 28% and played 36 minutes a game. Averaged just about 32 DK points. So cash game viable on those nights. Otherwise, I think we can leave him alone. All right, let's talk X Factor. I have a feeling we're both talking about the same guy here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the rookie is who I got. I think Noel's big here, but I think it's does Dennis Smith live up to the hype as their X Factor?
I mean, that's probably the true X Factor for the team, but I'm going to talk about Noel a little bit, especially on FanDuel with the increased emphasis on the defensive statistics.
It's a really good point, yep.
He is going to win tournaments this year on certain nights.
Are you afraid of him coming off the bench, though?
I am, but I think he can still average 24 to 28 minutes a game.
Okay.
And that obviously is the best case scenario in terms of Dirk's health. If Dirk gets hurt, I think Noel could get up to the 30-minute threshold. So
yeah, I think Noel's going to be one of those guys that we kind of go to the – like Harrison Barnes. When Dirk's out, play Noel. I feel like that's where the upside is.
Yeah, maybe. I'll have no problem playing him when the team's at full strength.
Okay.
He is over 2 steals and blocks per 36 minutes for his career. So I don't think that anybody in the league matches him in terms of the steal plus block upside. And those are the kind of guys that can have big nights in limited minutes. So I'm all over Noel. I love him in season-long leagues. A couple of articles went up that I wrote about season-long drafts, and I think I wrote about Noel in both of them. So I want all the Noel this season.
I'm not going to argue with you. I personally love him as a basketball player. I wasn't a fan of how they used him, really. I just think that he's got more upside than Carlisle's giving him credit for.
Yeah, I think they want to just be careful because he's battled some injuries. So, but again, if we're thinking that Dirk doesn't play very many minutes, I think Noel should, you know, have as much run as he can handle coming off the bench.
I have no problem with that. I mean, there's not much to cut into his playing time, and we've seen what Powell can do. We've seen what Josh McRoberts can do, so.
All right, that's going to be my bold prediction, is that Nerlens Noel is going to win the Comeback Player of the Year. I'm not 100% sure how that award works because he did kind of play last season, but I think if he comes back and plays like Philly Noel, he'll be in consideration.
Yeah, my hot take it's kind of a lukewarm take. It's probably kind of just a take. I actually think Noel will be the leading rebounder on this team, so I'm right there with you. I'm a fan of this guy. I know that I've kind of sounded like devil's advocate here over the past 5 minutes, but I'm a fan of him. I think he's a good basketball player, and I don't think they have anybody else on this team that can rebound. So I'm going to give that to him.
Definitely a fair prediction. Okay, let's move on to the San Antonio Spurs. They are coached by this guy, Greg Popovich. Have you heard
of him? He's pretty good. I think I read an article about him one time, like 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's his 22nd year with the Spurs. They were 61-21 last season, first in defensive efficiency and seventh in offensive efficiency. So just a really good season from a really good team that's been good for a really long time. This year, Vegas has them taking a step back. 54.5 wins is their projection. They are -110 to win the division, +750 to win the conference, and +1200 to win the title. That is tied for the fourth best odds this season. In terms of additions, they added Rudy Gay and Joffrey Laverne, and they lost Dwayne Dedman, Jonathan Simmons, and David Lee. So doubting the Spurs has historically just been about the dumbest thing you can do in the NBA. But is this the year that they take a step back? I kind of just feel like it might be.
I'm going to go ahead and just get my hot take out of the way and say they don't win this division. That's my hot take. I think they're still going to be good. I think they're obviously still going to make a run in the playoffs, but I think this is the Rockets' year for this. So, but yeah, and Kawhi not starting the season is not going to be great for him either, if we're being real.
That's a huge factor.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're talking like he could be back. They didn't even want to give a timetable, but they were saying that he was supposed to be back for regular season. So I feel like it's not going to be an extended thing. But if this lingers the whole year, not having him at 100%, I mean, even 80% of Kawhi is damn good. But not having 100% Kawhi is really going to hurt them, you know, in April/May.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we know about the Spurs is they won't rush him back.
And yeah, and that's good. That's a really good point for sure.
You know, when they'll wait until he's 100% and ready to play, and then they'll put him back in. So I'm not overly worried about that, but I do agree with you that Houston, in my opinion, is the team to beat in this division. They're just on paper, they're just so much of a better team. But again, like I said,
It's doubting the Spurs.
Is not a smart thing to do. They're sharp money on the over on their 54.5 wins. So it's not going to shock me if they're close to a 60-win team yet again. That's just how good these guys are. Greg Popovich will have four guys that, you know, we don't really even think about right now who are, you know, major pieces by the end of the rotation. That's just how they do it.
He could make us relevant, honestly. And I'm not good at basketball. Sorry, I didn't preface that. I'm 5'8" and unathletic. So
let's talk about Kawhi Leonard. So assuming he does get back to full strength, do you think that he can take another leap forward this year?
What's leaping forward for him? Like, I mean, can you get much better than he is right now?
It's going to be tough.
He's so good. I mean, he's talented on both ends of the court. I mean, he's clearly the best player on this team. He's clearly one of, if not the best player in the NBA right now. I mean, I don't know if he can get much better. I would love to see it personally, but I don't know what else the man can do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, his usage last season was 31.1%. That is extremely high for a Popovich offense.
It really is.
Tim Duncan never had a usage rate that high in his whole career, and he's one of the 10 best players in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Parker and David Robinson hit that number once. So I don't think that he can take another step forward in that department, and he's already incredibly efficient. You know, he shot 48.5% from the field, 38% from three last season. So unless you see him becoming, you know, a better, like, assist guy or suddenly racking up more rebounds, I just don't think that there's much more ceiling for him in terms of fantasy purposes.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly. I don't know. I kind of hope there is, though, because there's nothing better than seeing Kawhi Leonard get better. Because, oh, yeah. Man, watching him develop has been ridiculous.
he's amazing. He really is.
He really is.
Anybody else that you're looking at on the Spurs to be a regular contributor here?
I mean, obviously LMA, I know he's unhappy, quote unquote, you know, but I think that Pop is just finally just going to let him shoot. Not Portland LMA, but, you know, get him a few more touches because he's much, much more active on both ends of the courts when they actually let that man shoot. So obviously he's going to be huge, but I don't want to say it, but I actually think Rudy Gay is going to play a bigger part in this team than we want to give him credit for. I feel like it's a really good landing spot for him because Pop's not going to put up with his shit. I don't look at Rudy Gay as this elite level NBA player. I don't think this is like an elite level signing at all, but I feel like he's going to play a pivotal role on this team off the bench and potentially as a starter with Kawhi out and, you know, us not knowing how long Kawhi's going to be out right now.
Yeah, I mean, Rudy Gay is the ultimate X factor for this
team.
Yeah, so
100%. That is who I had listed as my X factor. So
I agree with you 100% on that. What he gives the team is going to be big. I mean, in my head, I don't see it as a great fit. You know, I think of him more as like an ISO, you know, mid-range type of player, which is the opposite of the system that the Spurs run. But if anybody can get him to fit in, it's Popovich, right? So he's clearly an elite talent, and we'll see how he fits. I mean, I have my question marks, but for them to hit their ceiling, they're going to need Rudy Gay to really be a good player this season.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably just going to fill in the Jonathan Simmons role, right? Come in, he's going to be allowed to play ISO, and, you know, come in off the bench once Kawhi's healthy. I think that's going to be really good for them because they've just got a better version of what they had last year. So I think that there's going to be upside with him as a real basketball and for fantasy. I think it's going to be really interesting with him being in this situation because I was kind of shocked he landed there.
Yeah, I think they're going to need much more from him than what they got from Jonathan Simmons last season. But
100%, definitely. When's Tony Parker supposed to be back? That's like December, right?
Yeah, December, January.
Because I just thought he'd be done, personally.
Yeah, that's another X factor, I think, on this team is how the point guards play without Parker. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Patty Mills guy. He averaged roughly 24 DK points per game when Tony Parker missed games last year. So I think he will certainly assume a bigger piece of the offense, and he's an elite shooter. But they've also got, you know, DeJounte Murray. That kid could potentially be a star. So
yeah,
they're going to, I think, give him the start, assuming that he's healthy at the start of the season, and see what they've got. I mean, they got to try and figure it out here, and it wouldn't shock me if he's another gem that the Spurs have unearthed. So I think that he's going to be another guy in determining how far their season goes.
Yeah, I agree with that too, for sure. He's definitely got a really high ceiling.
All right, so your bold prediction was that the Spurs are going to lose the division. I think that's fair. I'm going to echo the same hot take. How about that? Spurs do not win the division.
Smart men think alike.
All right, so if they're winning, they're losing, then I think we both have said that Houston is going to win. They are coached by Mike D'Antoni. This is his second year with the team. Last year, they won 55 games. They were second in the league on offense, tied for 17th on defense, and third in the league in pace. Their over-under this year is at 55.5 wins with a minus 125 juice on the over. They're only slight underdogs to win the division at plus 110, and then they are plus 1,000 to win the conference and plus 1,600 to win the title. They brought in Chris Paul, also brought in P.J. Tucker, Luke Richard and Bahamute, Tariq Black, Zhao Key, I'm sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly, and Tim Quarterman. Departures were Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell. So the Chris Paul and James Harden pairing, I think, is the number one question of the season in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of has to be. I mean, I don't want to get long-winded about this. I feel like it's going to work. Harden's really never played next to a guy of this level. I just said the wrong statement. Hasn't played next to a guy like this since joining Houston. I think it's going to be really good. I think Chris Paul takes a huge hit in fantasy value, but as for Harden, I don't know if it's going to hurt him that much. Obviously, he's not going to put up 16 assists a game, but you know, if he I still think that double digit assist is not out of the question for him on a regular basis, and he's still going to take all the shots. I mean, you said it yourself. On, I think, the last podcast, Chris Paul, he likes to pass, man. He likes to pass. So I think Harden's shot volume isn't really going to go anywhere.
I feel the same way. I think his usage might go down a tick. He was fourth in the league in usage last year. Yep. But I think where Paul really hurts him is in his assist percentage. He assisted on over 50% of the Houston makes last year that insane. Obviously he wasn't involved in shooting the ball. Yep.
That is so insane.
That's got to come down. That's got to come down. Chris Paul was fourth in the league in that department. So I think that unless Paul really embraces becoming just a spot-up shooter, which, by the way, I think he would be elite at.
Definitely.
I think it's going to be a little bit more of a back-and-forth partnership. And I will say I do love that D'Antoni has said that those guys are not going to play a ton together, meaning, you know, one is always going to be on the court. They'll probably each get, you know, 10 to 12 minutes a game playing without the other guy, which is awesome for their fantasy value. And for that reason, I'm still buying both of them. I just think that their prices might need to come down a bit to start the season. I guess we'll see with Harden, right? If Harden's going to be priced like he was when he was playing by himself, he's probably going to be an early season fade for me. But if they over-aggressively price him down because of the pairing, then I think I'm going to buy.
Yeah, I don't even know if Wednesday's prices are up yet, but I haven't looked at them if they are. Like, if Harden's 12.5, yeah, no, I'm good on that. But if he's 10.5, I'm all over that. And I think Paul's probably going to be in, I don't know, what, 8.5, maybe 9?
Yeah, that sounds DraftKings. Fair. That sounds fair.
So I feel like when it all works itself out, whether it be at the beginning of the season or, you know, a month into it, I feel like the prices are going to work themselves out to the point where they're playable again, because they are going to eat into each other. I mean, this is the exact same conversation we have with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, it's just a usage thing. It's a volume thing. But I feel like with this system, D'Antoni's system, they can make anybody a viable DFS option. So I feel like it's a good fit for him. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch, like a lot of fun to watch.
So I pulled it up real quick. James Harden is 10K and Chris Paul is 8K.
Yeah, I think they're both night. Who they play?
They're playing Golden State on the Tuesday two game slate.
Oh man, I completely forgot that was that game. Yeah, I think they're both playable. I mean, that's kind of a tough matchup if we're being real, but
I mean, it's going to be a super pace matchup though.
God, that's going to be second. That's opening night is Houston and Golden State. That's incredible.
Yep, and then Boston and Cleveland is the first game. So,
LeBron has to play in that game, right? Like the whole thing he could miss the opening game is nonsense, correct?
I really hope so.
God, man, Kyrie, is it in? It's got to be in Cleveland too, right?
It is in Kyrie is trying to go for 50.
Oh, God. I cannot wait for Tuesday. I'm so glad this is back.
All right, let's get back to Houston. Clint Capella, I think, is a strong player. He's just had some questionable minute loads. Do you think this season we can rely a little bit more on him?
Yeah, I think some of their depth is gone now. Obviously, Nene is still there, but he's got that old designation next to him. The big 7 foot 17 Chinese guy that I don't know how to say his name. I don't see him playing tons of minutes. So, yeah, I think Clint Capella, he's flashed it in the preseason already. I mean, Chris Paul got really, really good at throwing lobs. Harden's already there. I think Clint Capella gets some really, really easy buckets by having these two guys on the court playing with him. So I think it's going to be a good year for him.
Do you think they would ever consider playing Capella and Nene or Nene? I always say his name wrong. I say it both ways on every podcast.
What is the actual correct way? I say Nene.
I think it's Nene.
Okay. I called him Nene for a long, long time, but when that song came out, I had to stop.
Right? And then all of a sudden he was like, no, it's Nene. Anyway. Yeah. Do you think those guys could play together at certain points?
I mean, Nene has a nice mid-range game, so I don't think the spacing would be that terrible. But I don't know if I love that, especially for this team, because they play small and fast. I don't know if having 2 7-foot guys out there is going to play them, you know, work very well for the system.
All right, so yeah, I agree with that. And I think on most nights, Nene is going to still command 20 minutes a night.
Yeah.
So that means there's only 28 left for Capella. So I'm not overly bullish on him to start the year. I do think that if he gets the opportunity, he's a buy. Like, he's clearly talented, and it's an amazing situation to play in, playing with two of the best passers in the league. But if he's not going to get a ton of minutes, I think I'm going to be scared to go there on most nights.
With his average price point, though, I mean, you're paying in the 5K, maybe low 6K range on DraftKings for him. And 28 minutes, I mean, he still has double-digit rebound upside with a handful of blocks. I mean, as long as he can get 6 or 7 easy baskets, like, I mean, there's tons of upside for his price point, you know, even in 28 minutes. We've seen him do it. But, I mean, I agree with you. It's not – I don't necessarily know if he's going to be a cash game play. But as a GPP option for the price range that he normally is, I still like him. I think, you know, in the right matchup, he could be a monster.
Maybe. Maybe I'm underselling his upside. I mean, he is only 5,600 on the opening night slate, which is definitely pretty fair. His per 36 minutes last year, he averaged roughly 40 DK points. So,
whew.
Yeah, so he's talented, but...
I didn't actually think it would be that steep, even after I just talked him up. Like, I didn't think it would be there. That's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, but again, like, at 5,600, we kind of need 40. So, I get that he can do better than that in spurts, but he's more of a fade for me than a play early in the year. It's okay that we disagree on him a little.
Yeah.
What do you think about the rest of the rotation? Anybody in particular intrigue you?
I mean, Eric Gordon's pretty good at basketball.
He's not bad.
Yeah, he can do that thing from behind that line that's far away from the basket pretty well. I mean, these other guys, we know what they are. They're 3-point shooters. Trevor Ariza is going to play some defense. I think a lot of Houston's depth is gone, which makes me want to hate on them, but I still just think that what they have is so good that I'm just going to overlook the lack of depth that they used to have. But yeah, I mean, this is a fun team. This is a team built for what D'Antoni likes to run. And I like when teams do that. They brought in a squad that can, you know, play the 6 seconds or less. I mean, that's important for D'Antoni's system. And they play it very, very well. They're going to set some more NBA records, I think.
Yeah. So their depth is absolutely horrid.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got PJ Tucker on the bench, who I think is a fine piece, and Eric Gordon and Nene. But other than that, there's not like a viable NBA player on the roster.
Mba Mute can come in and play some defense for him. I just think that the outside of Eric Gordon, their bench is lacking offense. I mean, Gordon and Nene, I mean, you can only run so much pick and roll with those two. I just think that, but I don't think that they're done. I don't think that this is the full roster that they're going to bring into the playoffs. I would be shocked if they didn't make, you know, I don't want to say an all-star break because it's actually what it's like a week or two before the all-star break. They changed the date now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so I could see them making a move or two for just a couple of cheap pieces, you know, rentals for the playoffs. But
for sure,
I don't see that this being the roster heading into late April, early May.
Right. And like we talked about, the bench is going to be buoyed by one of Chris Paul or James Harden.
Definitely.
You know, one of the two of them is going to really be good playing point. Yeah. with the bench unit. Yeah. So I was initially concerned, but then I was like, oh, never mind. Like, they're going to have one of the 10 best players in the league playing on their bench unit, essentially. So
and they don't have to play Harden 48 minutes to accomplish that.
Right. It's, yeah,
it's really good for this team. Yeah.
It's going to be excellent. So I'm with you. I kind of like Ariza as a cash game option in, you know, certain matchups.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking about it in my head. I think that their best lineup this year might be Ariza at the four and Gordon at the three. Ryan Anderson did shoot 40% from three last year, but he gives you virtually nothing else. So
yeah, he's not playing defense. He's not rebounding the ball. They ran Ariza at the four quite a bit last season. So
right.
I feel like
Anderson got hurt for a while, and Ariza played the four sort of out of necessity, and he was awesome at the four. So
he's awesome wherever you put him, though. Yeah, Ariza, that's a good player. Man. He's great, a good player. Yeah, for sure.
And then PJ Tucker is a similar version of Ariza, not a good shooter, but gives you all the other stuff. So I think we might see less minutes for Ryan Anderson this year.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. He played like trash at home, too. I don't understand what that was. Sight lines or something, but Ryan Anderson was not great to start the season. I don't know how he finished off with the numbers, but.
All right, you got an X factor for me?
Eric Gordon was the guy I wrote down. I mean, it's just, you know, sixth man of the year. It's probably not a hot take for the X factor there.
I'm with you, too. I think he's important for this team. He was better playing off the bench last year than in the starting lineup. I think that's going to be an important role for him again.
Definitely.
All right, you got a hot take for me.
I mean, it just kind of goes with the Spurs one. I think this is who wins the division.
All right, so this is maybe, I don't know, maybe this isn't even a hot take, but this is kind of how I would do it if I was coaching the team. I would bring James Harden out of the game first if I was coaching the Rockets this season.
Okay.
So I like the idea of Chris Paul playing with the starters and then Harden getting to play with Gordon and Nene and some of the other guys that are returning that he already has a little bit more chemistry with. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, so basically you're having Chris Paul play the first 12 with James Harden coming out with, like, you know, after 8 and then starting the second quarter.
Yeah, maybe even 6.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah. So I think that Harden is the guy that comes out first. I don't know if most people are going to necessarily agree with that because he was, you know, second in the MVP voting last year. But I don't think it really matters ultimately. I just think that for their offense, I think that's how they're going to look the best.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And getting James Harden X amount of minutes against the other teams, the opposing team's twos. Oh, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Just good night. Absolutely good night.
That is how you get buckets. So,
all right, let's finish up here. We've got your team.
Oh, the world's best team?
The best team in the division, according
to these guys were here.
The Memphis Grizzlies. second year coached under David Fizdale. They were 43-39 last year. So, you know, I don't know why you're hating on them so hard.
Because I watch them sometimes.
Tied for 18th in offensive efficiency, tied for 6th in defensive efficiency, pace down at 28th. Their over-under this year is 37.5. Division odds are plus 3,300 on the division, plus 15,000 for the conference, and plus 30,000 for the title odds. Can I just say, I'm surprised that the over-under on this team is so low. I mean, unless you think that 43 wins was, like, way out-kicking the talent level, are they saying that Zebo is worth 5.5 wins?
Kind of. You got to remember, number one, Tony Allen was the anchor of this defense, so losing him is kind of...
What did
Big
Tony
two.
Allen play, like 20 minutes a game last year?
But it was 20 minutes of defense, and he's locking down. I mean, last year he wasn't that great, but like Tony Allen's played a role for this team. I'm not a huge fan of the guy. I'll fully admit that. But I mean, these guys played big minutes for us. Like, and Zebo was a bench guy. Like that's so big. I think that this is going to be an off. The reason I think. That I don't think the Grizzlies, my hot takes, they don't make the playoffs. Right. They've made the playoffs 7 straight years. I don't think they're there. I think the defense takes a huge step back because I feel like Fizdale's finally going to try and get these guys to play up pace. There were only, 2 teams that were worse than them last year when it comes to pace. that's what Fizdale wants to do, and he's never had a – this roster isn't really built to do that. They got rid of Zebo, who really slowed this roster down. They got rid of Tony Allen, who isn't necessarily a transition offense-type guy. I think that they're going to try and go up pace, and I think it's going to just ruin this team because they're not going to be able to do that, and I think that they're going to suffer, and they're going to lose games because of that.
Interesting. I think I would lean over on this team. I don't know if they're necessarily a playoff team, but I think they're probably closer to 500 than they are to like 35 wins. That's just my opinion. In addition to losing Zach Randolph and Tony Allen, they also lost Vince Carter and Troy Daniels. And addition-wise, not a ton of help. They brought in Tyreek Evans, Ben McLemore, Ivan Rabb, although he's going to spend, it looks like, a solid portion of the year in the G League. Dylan Brooks and Mario Chalmers making his return to United States basketball. So the reason that I love this team so much, not love this team, but the reason I think that I would go over on this team is just because Mike Conley is just a boss.
God, are you trying to make me blush over here?
I love Mike Conley.
I love you. You know that? I love you. That's yeah, Mike it. Conley is, he's really, really good, and nobody wants to call him that. He is excellent on both ends of the court. He can run an offense, though his assist numbers really don't show that. But if we counted hockey assists in this sport, he would get a lot of them. Him and Mark are not only best friends, but it's fun to watch them on the court together. They almost read each other's minds at times. Conley is the best when he's actually aggressive because he is fully capable of scoring the ball in the high 20s, low 30s. He just doesn't always want to do it. And the fact that him and Mark are the exact same way at times can really, really cause them games. But whenever one of them turns it on, if both of them turns it on, this is a tough team to beat. But like I said earlier, I think the defense comes down a bit because the scoring load's going to be back on those two guys again. And, they're going to – fatigue is a thing that you have to think about. So, yeah, I think Mike Conley's pretty good at basketball, but it's tough to see it on a regular basis because of the stats. And everybody wants to see stats. Nobody's watching Grizzlies games, so it's tough to call him good when you're not watching the games.
I mean, his stats are still pretty impressive.
But they're not like Western Conference All-Star numbers. Yeah.
He's probably not going to make an All-Star team again, but he upped his scoring by over 5 points a game last year and increased his field goal percentage and his three-point percentage. He shot almost 41% from three last year and took nearly three more threes a game. So I love Conley, and I think that he can continue to even improve upon those numbers without Zebo this season. So we'll skip ahead a little bit because Zebo, he was first on the team in usage last year, third in field goal attempts per game.
Him coming off the bench was huge there. That kind of skews the numbers a bit. But yeah, he was their go-to off the bench, and he closed a lot of fourth quarters too.
So that's my big question: is where does his usage go? I mean, do you think that Conley and Gasol get the majority of that? Because if so, I think they could both have really, really big seasons. Do you think maybe a guy like Tyreek Evans gets a bench type role like that? I'm legitimately just not sure because I've looked at this roster, and I just don't know who the third guy is going to be.
All right. For the starters, I'm pretty sure I've already stated on this podcast, I think it was the first one we did, that I think Chandler Parsons is the worst basketball player in the National Basketball Association. So I'm not going to say it's coming from him. They paid JaMychal Green. I think that they're going to try to get him some usage. I think Conley and Gasol go up by quite a drastic amount. But when we're talking about the bench, we'll bring this up. My X factor is Mario Chalmers. He was fantastic for us two seasons ago before he ruptured his Achilles. I think he's going to fall back into another massive role off the bench for this team. And I hate to say it because I don't really know your feelings on him, but I absolutely love the game that Tyreek Evans brings to the court. And I think he is, he played here for here being Memphis for his college years. I think he's going to fall right into this rotation. I think he's going to have a massive usage rate off the bench.
So that's what I'd love to see for Tyreek, is for him to play the majority of his minutes with the backup units.
Definitely. So, I think that's what they're going to do for sure.
Yeah, I hope that that's the case because I think he's the most logical answer for a guy who can, kind of do it himself on the bench units. Let's talk about Gasol a little bit. We kind of grazed over him. He's kind of a weird big man in the fact that his shooting percentages are kind of backwards. Like, he's not great from the field, but he shoots it nearly 40% from three, and he's not a great rebounder, but he can give you, you know, like five dimes a night. So talk about him and just what he does for the offense.
He is a point guard in a chubby 7-footer's body is what he is. You're right. He can't rebound for shit. And he doesn't want to, I feel like. And that's why him and Z-Bo played really, really well together, because they had the roles.
Right, Z-Bo looked at every rebound like it was a T-bone
everything. Steak. It was all his, man. That's all he wanted to do. You know, I mean, Gasol is – he is as good as Conley is. This is Gasol's offense. He runs this offense. They run it through the 7-footer quite often. And that's why his assist totals are – I mean, he is – I mean, he's up there with Jokic. He's up there with Horford. He's up there – I mean, he's a really, really good passer. It's actually kind of funny to watch a guy that you would look at and say he doesn't have an athletic bone in his body, and some of the stuff he can pull off is actually kind of impressive. But like I said with Conley, and I brought it up with Gasol, he's not aggressive at right. all. When he wants to be, yeah, I mean, he's a monster. Because I disagree with you. I actually think his field goals, field goal attempts, his percentages don't really reflect it, but I think he's actually a better shooter than people want to give him credit for. He's got a mid-range game. He can shoot the three. He doesn't want to bang in the paint, which, you know, dude, you're giant. Please go down there. You know, like, we need some help. Jermichael Green is a tiny, tiny four. So, I mean, it's – I don't think we're ever going to see Gasol's ceiling, just because I don't think he has the genetic makeup to let us see that ceiling, because he's just not that aggressive. He can't be that guy consistently.
Well, I hope you're wrong, and I hope that we get to see it a bit this year. I think Z-Bo leaving might open up the door a tiny bit. He did average 37 DK points a game in the 9 games last year that he played without Randolph. So I think it's possible for him to take a step forward. And I think, obviously, for the sake of the team, those shots are better off going to Conley and Gasol than virtually anywhere else.
Couldn't agree more with that. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so I know you hate him, but Chandler Parsons is my X factor here.
Oh my God, I gotta go, Matt. I'm sorry.
All right, I'll finish up. I'll text you later. Good
Lord.
He, in my opinion, is the key to this team. They need to get something out of him.
Yeah, they need to get $90 million out of him is what they need to get.
Well, that's not happening. That's not happening. So I'm about as down on J. Michael Green as you can get. I'm just not a fan of the dude. He might be a guy that if he's getting, you know, 30 plus minutes a night, maybe we can look to him in some cash game situations. But I just don't think he has any upside. You know, he's never going to be a guy that's going to score you, you know, 20 points a game.
No, I think you hit the nail right on the head, actually. I think he is a cash game type guy in a matchup basis, but he doesn't bring the upside that you want in a GPP. I'm not a fan of him either. I think they should have let him walk. But, you know, they got to play somebody out there. So I guess, you know, they gave him some money. We're all about signing bad contracts around here in Memphis. So it's kind of our thing.
Well, the guy that they're going to play at the four is Chandler Parsons.
Ugh, God. That's not going to work out.
If they want to get into a little bit of a run and gun type offense, I really think that that's their best bet. Parsons at the four, Gasol at the five, Tyreke Evans, and then some combination of, you know, Ben McLemore or Mario Chalmers or, you know, Tyler Ennis, James Ennis, whichever Ennis brother is on the
And we have a Harrison brother too, if you want to get that to, you know, get that out. I think it would make sense, especially considering I'm the one that just said I think they're going to try and play with pace for the first time ever. I just think that Chandler Parsons is trash.
I hear you. His knees might be trash, or his, you know, Achilles, whatever he hurt, might be trash.
It's his dignity is what's hurt, because he knows basketball. That's why he's on, you know, injury reports all the time. That guy.
Anyway, can we agree that if this team is going to be good, they're going to need something from some sort of third contributor?
Yeah. Obviously, for sure. But I don't know if Chandler Parsons is that guy.
All right, let's get a hot take in here.
My hot take was that they don't make the playoffs. I mean, and while you look at this roster and that might not seem hot, they've made the playoffs 7 straight years and they've had worse rosters than this. I don't see it happening for them this year.
So, yeah, my hot take is that they are going to finish in the top. We'll go top 10 in terms of offensive efficiency this season.
Wow. Do you want me to send you a Grizzlies jersey, man? I feel like you're kind of a fan.
I mean, Gasol and Conley are two of my favorite players. I feel like I've said that in every podcast. I've said that there's like one team at least has one of my favorite players, but I really do like this Grizzlies team, and I want to see what these guys can do playing a little bit more up-tempo this year. Because I do think that they're incredible floor spacers, great passers, great decision makers, and I'd like to see them get a few more opportunities to do, you know, what they do in games this season. So maybe it's a little bit of an optimistic take, but I'm hoping that they can up the pace and up the offensive efficiency this year.
Hey, I truly hope so, too. I'm a pessimistic type guy. I could see it. They know how to play together. I mean, the roster turnover really wasn't that bad, minus, you know, obviously two big pieces are gone. But I think that, you know, they can still play together. They're still going to be a competitive basketball team.
Absolutely.
But it's going to take a minute for it to click, I feel like.
All right. That's going to do it for this NBA edition of On the Daily. I just want to remind you guys one more time that if you want to get the early bird pricing on the RotoViz NBA Pass, you have to sign up before midnight on Sunday. And again, you can get a 30% discount through the podcast homepage. That's rotoviz.com/NBA podcasts. All right, for Vince, who you can find on Twitter at WakeWorkWake, I am Matt LaMarca at Matt LaMarca. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.